This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, Tee Shao Eek. It's our public health show today. And my co-host joins me, Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. Hi, Azrul. How are you doing?
Hi. Very well, thanks. You know what, Shao Eek? We're all learning Greek these days. Alpha.
That's right.
Delta, Lambda, now Omicron.
So the joke going around is this is not how we want to learn the Greek alphabet.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling that we're going to run out of alphabets very soon.
Don't say la.
I'm not optimistic.
Way to go to start the show, shout it.
And to end the year.
Yeah.
So today, we're not talking about COVID, though. We are talking about alcohol abuse, alcohol-related problems. So the issue of alcohol has hit the headlines in Malaysia in recent weeks, but not directly for reasons related to safety or health. You know, we've seen controversies over names. We've seen this past week, actually, issues related to the licensing, for coffee shops to sell beer. But, you know, today, I mean, this is the Health and Living Show. This is our public health series. What we want to talk about is the other problem related to alcohol intake. And that's that, you know, excessive use and addiction to alcohol leads to health problems and societal issues. So joining us today, Azrul, is Associate Professor Dr. Anne Yee, Clinical Addiction Psychiatrist from University of Malaya Medical Center. We're going to discuss, what kinds of data we have in terms of alcohol consumption in Malaysia, what kinds of risky drinking behaviours are prevalent in Malaysia, looking at treating alcohol, related problems as a health disorder from an addiction perspective, and, discuss a little bit about what kind of alcohol control strategies are needed as well. How are you today, Dr. Anne?
I'm great. So, thanks, Shao Eek and Azrul, to have me here.
Yes, and our lines are open. Do call us at 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. If you have questions or thoughts you'd like to share, you can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Anne, perhaps I can get you to start by describing the spectrum of alcohol use, because I think we need to understand that it's not just a very single dimension perspective.
Yes, it is, right. There are many old terms we call this disease. That's why making people confused, right, over this, right, alcohol use. But now, right, according to the Diagnostic Statistic Manual on Mental Disorders, we actually just call it, right, alcohol use disorder. And then, right, we actually, right, divided it into, three degrees, mild, moderate, or severe. All right, to cover up to all the spectrums. So this will cover all the old terms for this group of people. We used to call them alcohol dependence, alcohol abuse, and hazardous alcohol use, alcoholism. So right, now we are just calling, to categorize them into right, alcohol use disorders, and right, divided into mild, moderate, or severe. So what is alcohol use disorders? It means, right, to describe people who have consistent issues with alcohol and yet, right, they continue to drink to excess. This group of people, they have a strong desires for alcohol, a difficult time controlling its use, and right, continue using it, right, even though, right, they know that's already causing them a significant distress or impairments, right, in their life. And this had to be at least for the past 12 months. Even with the serious consequences, right, these people, right, they still place the high priority on alcohol than the events or the commitments, right, in their life.
Can you give us an example of what that looks like when people prioritize alcohol over other, responsibilities, other areas of their daily lives?
Right. So the very simplest indications is the minutes they wake up, right? They're already thinking that they want to drink. So we call it eye opening. And so it's they don't go to any functions anymore, or it's or go to work because of their drinking behavior. Let's say, right, they spend more time, right, to get over their hangover, or right, they like spend a lot of time, right, to think of how to obtain the alcohol. Right, so these are these aspects, right, so how this group of people will look like. So this group of people usually, right, have a lot of problems, like issues, right, with the marriage, with their interpersonal, right, relationships, right, with work. Right, the boss will definitely don't like them because, right, they will missing in action. They probably was like have a lot of MCs. So if they are students, so they cannot keep up with their work, homework, and right, they cannot perform.
Significant disruption to important aspects in their lives.
Exactly. Today's right, I also want to talk about right, a group of people. We call it a binge consumer. This means right, binge drinking. So binge drinking, right, is defined as right, a person suddenly right, raise their blood alcohol concentrations above 0.08 gram per deciliter. That is actually very scientific definitions. So it typically happens right, when men consume more than 5 right, drinks, women consume more than 4 drinks in about 2 hours. So right, we in Malaysia, we classify as a 1 setting. And most people who binge drink, they do not have a alcohol use disorder. They do not have a severe alcohol use disorder. Why I'm bringing this up is because, right, our recent National Health and Morbidity Survey in 2019, that is by the Institute for Public Health, IKU, found that, right, our proportions of binge drinking among the current drinkers in Malaysia is 45.8%. This figure is higher than UK, which is 27, higher than in Indonesia's, which is 29. And right, in 2014, right, there's another study, it's called it's multifaceted sampling studies conducted in a group of the millennials across 6 sites in the Klang Valley. So right, there are 326 respondents. They found that 30% of them, right, were actually drink consumers. They are not like alcohol use disorders. So why is it important? Because right, they found that right, drink consumer were at the risk of right, they have a risk of driving vehicles under the influence of alcohol, or right, being forced into sexual acts, or prone to smoking. So that is why right, it's a huge concern.
Okay, well, you know, Dr. Ann, perhaps if I may just chip in there, you know, the going back to that definition of binge drinking mentioned earlier, you know, we find that, you know, shall we, it's different according to different jurisdictions. You know, in the UK, you'll find that the definition for binge drinking is actually well described. You know, they say it's like, and it's different as what was mentioned just now by Dr. Ann, for men and women. They describe binge drinking as 8 units of alcohol in a single session for men and 6 units of alcohol in a single session for women. And, you know, 6 units is basically 2 pints of 5% strength beer.
Very specific.
Or, yes, or 2 large glasses of 12% wine. And, you know, 8 units is 5 bottles of 5% beer or 5 small glasses of 13% wine. So in the Malaysian context, it's actually described as 6 drinks standard, 6 or more standard drinks in one sitting. So if you're drinking more than that in one sitting, that's considered binge drinking. And then there's also something else called heavy episodic drinking, which is over a week period. But, you know, we need to be able to describe what binge drinking is and where that problem is. Because as what was mentioned by Dr. Ann just now, is that the NHMS 2019 findings, which were released earlier this year, seem to indicate that half of all people who drink alcohol in this country have a binge drinking problem. And that's where, you know, the focus of discussion today really is about what's going on. You know, what kind of issues are we seeing and why is this happening? It's something that we need to understand. And I'll share a little bit more in detail where some of the findings that are coming out from, but some of the interesting findings that come out is from a study that was conducted by the Institute of Public Health, Ministry of Health, which seemed to indicate that this problem is not just confined to a specific, you know, non-Malay, non-Muslim community, but also includes the Malay community as well.
What did the study find?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that, that the study indicated, this was conducted by Dr. Hatta Mutalib of the Institute of Public Health, is that, first of all, males and smokers were significantly prone to binge drinking, and there was a higher proportion of Malays, Bumiputra, Saban, Sarawak, with evidence of drinking behavior compared to non-binge drinkers. So, you know, we're basically looking at, again, according to the study, one in two current drinkers in Malaysia who are 13 years and older reported to have engaged in binge drinking. So obviously, if you were to ask a question at the very beginning, do we have a drinking problem in Malaysia? I think we do. And Dr. Anne has just compared it against the UK and Indonesia, and theirs is 30% of people drink alcohol, and yet ours is almost 50%.
Dr. Anne, you know, as an addiction specialist, why are you concerned with binge drinking? Where does it fall? And you said it's not a considered part of alcohol use disorder. So where does it fall into this spectrum of, you know, alcohol use and abuse? Why should we be worried about people who are binge drinking?
Right. So it's it is a great concern because, right, this group of people, it will not come for treatments, right? Because it's fall out on the spectrums of this alcohol use disorder, which actually, yes, right? So when they come to me also, right, I won't treat them as an alcohol use disorder, right? Because they only drink in one festivals and that's it, all right? But the problem is, right, after they consume suddenly high amounts of alcohol, the consequences of it, right, is not health related. It's more of a social related. For example, right, just like I already say that, right, they have a high risk, right, to be exposed to other risks such as road accidents, physical injuries, other substance use, and sexual risk. Mm. So this one, right, I felt is the public health should actually come in to have the strategies to actually to protect this group of people from all these drinking related social issue.
Mm. All right.
Actually, you're totally right, Dr. Anne. And with the World Health Organization, actually, you know, because it does studies in alcohol misuse, found that when it came to the Malaysian statistics, quite alarming. And again, it's disaggregated against to male and female, but it basically found that with problems concerning alcoholism, it actually causes deaths. And you find that when it comes to men, it's 17.6%, road traffic injuries, and women, it's 10.9%. Yeah. And liver cirrhosis, which is damage to the liver, is pretty much equal at 16% for both men and women, and cancers at 2.2% and 0.6%. So, you know, there are real consequences as a result of alcoholism, and especially when you look at binge drinking, which is happening, especially amongst young people. But obviously, during that period of time, right, when you're having a good time, you're young, and, you know, you don't think about these consequences, right? But the reality here is that, you know, it does seem that a lot of people who are drinking alcohol today are indulging in binge drinking. And it's something to be worried about because it has real consequences to others as well, on top of themselves.
I want to get into that psychology of that a little bit later. You know, many people who drink or who consume alcohol will not see themselves as having any sort of abuse or disorder, abuse problem or disorder. So, you know, how exactly do people move along that spectrum if we are looking at the mild, moderate to severe? And, you know, how can we apply that into looking at people who binge drink as well? And then we'll move on to looking at alcohol control strategies. Let's go for a quick break now. My co-host joining me, Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy, and Associate Professor Dr. Ann Yee, Clinical Addiction Psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Center. We're discussing whether we have a drinking problem in Malaysia. We definitely have a huge binge drinking problem. So do share your thoughts. 0377 332 900 is the number to call, or you can WhatsApp us at 018 789 8899. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik, and my co-host for the Public Health Series today, Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy. We're discussing whether we have a drinking problem in Malaysia. And, you know, studies have found that almost half of drinkers in Malaysia actually indulge in binge drinking, something that's been defined as a consuming, it's differentiated between men and women. But averaged out consuming six or more drinks in one sitting within 2 hours. And there are findings from the study that bust the stereotypes, the very, very typical cultural stereotypes that are usually related to people who consume alcohol. And I think this is important because it tells us how we need to better target, alcohol prevention strategies and, looking at how to address it from a public health perspective. Dr. Ann, before the break, I said that I wanted to touch on the psychology of people who consume alcohol. And this is coming from what Azrul said, right? When you are drinking, especially in this context of binge drinkers, I suppose, it is usually a social setting. You're having a good time, you're with peers. Maybe we can talk a little bit about the psychology of people who consume alcohol and what makes people move along the spectrum of alcohol use into it becoming a disorder.
Right. Alcohol use disorder is actually caused by a combination of genes. I give you the example. It's there is one enzyme in our body to metabolize these toxic byproducts of the alcohol. And not all of us have the full functioning of these genes. So for Chinese, 80% of us, we don't have full function of these genes. And therefore, for Chinese, they are tend to have these toxins built up.
And that why we turn red in the face?
Yes, that's why we turn red. That's why we have nausea and then we vomit. And you will stop drinking.
Right. So it's an inbuilt a defense mechanism.
It's like an inbuilt, a protective mechanism. So that is happened in Chinese. And for Indians, it's they have a full functioning of this enzyme. Their genetic makeup is much more like Western people. So they have full functions. For Malay, I think it's somewhere in between.
And there's this is based on science.
This is based on science. We have all professors in UM actually did the genetic studies on this particular enzyme for three races. So it's just that they haven't done it for the indigenous peoples in the Borneo. So I'm not sure. But I think it lies in between.
That's the genetic component.
That's the genetic component. So for psychological components, of course, people with the low self-esteem, a bit more impulsive, they would actually tend to use alcohol to escape the reality. So then they will be from the binge drinking, slowly it become a alcohol use disorder. Of course, it is not developed overnight. It develops slowly. So it can be just drink during festivals, then slowly it becomes every weekend, then it becomes every day.
Well, it goes back to that earlier question, right? I mean, there's a spectrum of drinking, right? There are people who sip drinks at social events, but they're not really into alcohol, but they are just because it's social. And then there's also the very hardcore drinkers. So, and also looking at different people's tolerance towards drinking alcohol, right? So what could make people drunk or tipsy, you know, maybe two drinks or one drink also already tipsy, like looking already funny, glug glug and all that. But for other people, it's a lot more, right? And you just mentioned just now how that can happen. But I think the issue here, I think I want to be able to ask you, Dr. Ann, is really when, at what point does it become a problem? I think is the issue here, you know, from your view.
So the issue here is like, right, they had to ask themselves, right, whether they have actually wanted to try to reduce or stop drinking, but just couldn't. Could be like what you say, that's right. So once they stopped drinking, they had started to have withdrawal symptoms, like trouble with sleeping, shakiness, like sweatings or the hand tremor, so their hands start to shake, right? Whether they actually spend too much of the time they think of, right, or being sick from the after effects, or need to recover from the after effects. Whether they continue to drink, even though it already caused like trouble with the friends, with the family, with the teachers, but they still continue to drink. And they kind of like give up all the activities they used to like to do, and they just lost interest on that. So that was the time that they definitely had to get help. Mm-hmm. So this is the alcohol use disorder.
Yeah. Are there certain risk factors related to young people and drinking? I don't want to stereotype that this belongs to a certain age group, but are there certain factors that would be influential, and what can we do to address those?
Yeah, there are risk factors, right? One is being a man is already a risk factor. Okay, because of the social reasons, young men are always perceived, that's right, you need to be drink, you need to know how to drink in order to become masculine, a lot of young men, drink is because of the peer pressure, right? And second is, if the person have a family history of alcoholism. As I say that, right, this the alcohol use disorder is a component of genetic inheritance. Mm. So if your father is a drinker, your father is alcoholism, right? So there are times seven chances that the sons may be also become alcoholism. Mm. Right? That is a component of genetics, also components of upbringing. Mm. The sons see the fathers, how they drink and all that kind of things, right? They will actually wanted to try as well. Okay, people with depressions, with bipolar disorder, with the anxiety disorders, or schizophrenia have a high risk of actually using alcohol, trying to treat themselves. Right, so they was trying to use alcohol, right, to treat their depressed mood, or to actually to as an anxiolytics tools, right, to make their anxiety go away. And just I already mentioned that, right, those who have low self-esteem, very impulsive, right? So that's why the young people, majority of them are very impulsive. And then they are also trying to have a component of low self-esteem. So that's why...
To just add on, Dr. Ann, I think it's also important to note that there isn't enough knowledge also of the problem of alcoholism, awareness of that being a problem. So people also don't know when to stop or recognize that they have a problem. And you can add on those factors, including family dysfunction, peer pressure, peer influence.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And the first time trying alcohol is because of peer pressure.
But the toxic masculinity that you mentioned just now, literally toxic here in this case, is a real factor that, when you look at studies in America, you find that men are twice as likely to binge drink compared to women. And really, it's really to meet those expectations and that image of being a man, or it's part of manhood, the ritual of manhood, that you should be able to drink and drink a lot of it. Mm. So you're drinking from a keg or, those big beer towers and all that, you're expected to finish it. And it is quite a cultural thing, and it perhaps even a custom even for some communities.
Mm. And, you know, speaking of culture, Alvin has messaged in to say, you know, he does a lot of networking and it normally involves alcohol. Again, that comes in as part of the drinking and the work and perhaps, may I add, corporate culture as well. And, you know, it's part of the toxic masculinity syndrome. It's part of wanting to stand out. If you don't drink and be part of the crowd, you're not going to get that contract, or you're not going to be part of that crowd, right? How do you, Dr. Anne, how do you treat clients or patients who come to you with alcohol use disorder? And from there, can we infer anything that can be used to address binge drinking?
Right. I treat alcohol use disorder. I don't really treat like binge drinking. As I mentioned before, it's like a binge drinking's majority of them, right, they don't have alcohol use disorder. They just drink during the festivals and that's it. Right? So, and they don't have the problems as just now I have mentioned, like with their life, with their interpersonal relationships, or right, so with their work and all that. So I don't treat them. All right. I do treat them alcohol use disorder. So it's, so if right, so this person coming in is because of alcohol use disorder, then right, I would treat them, and I will give them the options of right, you want to be total abstinence from alcohol, or you want to have a control drinking. So control drinking means that right, we fix these like drinking in like two units, right? And like so let the patients to choose. Then later on, right, I got medicine for them, and I also got behavioral treatments for them.
And how important is the behavioral treatment side?
Oh, it is very important because, right, the medicine sites can reduce the craving for alcohols, and it can also try to deal with the alcohol withdrawals like symptoms. But, right, you need to retrain the brain to actually try to function again without under influence of alcohol or without the alcohol. So that one's right, behavioral treatments is very important. That's right. It need to retrain the brain to like think or to do things right without the alcohol.
And what is the outlook, Dr. Anne? Because a lot of people will feel that it's too long and difficult a road, or if they've fallen off the wagon a few times, it's too difficult. You know, they just can't do it. Perhaps they feel and they're burdened by a lot of judgments. What's the outlook when it comes to being able to treat alcohol use disorder?
Well, like, definitely the outlooks will be right, multiple trying. It won't be right, so one times and that's it. I always give them an example. It's like, right, have you tried to slim down before? Have you tried, like, you know, how is it look like? Right. So maybe it's right, like 3 months you're able to run, so it's 3 kilometers, and then one fine day it was raining and you just stop. And then later on, right, you just don't run anymore. Right. You maybe it's right, eating 3 months of salads. And yet, right, one fine day, right, people offer you a nasi lemak and you just lapse, and then you just started to eat nasi lemak. So it is not easy to quit or change a behavior for anything, right? Not just the alcohol only. Yep. So it's not easy to quit smoking. It is not easy. I mean, like, even it is not easy to quit eating the dessert. Right, women's like or eating the nasi lemak like in the morning. So I always tell my clients, if you drink back, it's okay, right? We just do it again, because this will be a normal so-called a recovery, right? The recovery route. So the recovery is not like a straight line. It's like, right, so I quit alcohol today and that's it. I have no problem for my life, right? So I will not drink a single sip, no. Right, most likely it will be like, right, I quit and I abstinence for a few days, then right, something happens, right, my wife scolded me, nagged me, and I feel very stressed, then I go back to drink once, right, and then later on, so it's, I started to drink a bit more, then I back to the back turns and all that kind of thing. So it will be like this. It's a winding road, right? Yeah. However, the more time they try, it will get easier because the brain get it. right? The brain started to know that it's okay, right? So this is actually not that hard to do. I can do this. All right, so slowly, it's like, all right, so eventually the clients will be successful, quit all this thing. Of course, medicines will help them also to reduce the craving, to deal with the withdrawal symptoms.
Let's go for a quick break. And when we come back, we'll look at addressing alcohol problems from a public health perspective, especially when we have such a big problem of binge drinking that doesn't fall under, this addiction kind of a perspective. How can we address it? A lot of people are going to say, I don't have a problem. How do we get that through and change the mindsets? My co-host joining me today, Azrul Mohammad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy, together with Associate Professor Dr. N. Yee, Clinical Addiction Psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Center. We are discussing alcoholism, or what's alcohol use disorder, but more importantly, a binge drinking problem in Malaysia. Do call us at 03-7733-2900 if you have anything you'd like to share, or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik, and my co-host, Azrul Mohammad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy. Our guest today, Associate Professor Dr. N. Yee, Clinical Addiction Psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Center. Our lines are open, 03-7733-2900. Do call us if you'd like to ask any questions or share anything about the topic we're discussing today, which is alcohol use disorder and binge drinking in Malaysia. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We do have a WhatsApp message here. And I'd like to preface this by saying I'm so sorry for your loss. Our listener messaged to say her brother passed away, no thanks to a drunkard. And 2 years later, no news from, regarding the murderer. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. And that comes back to what Dr. Anne and you, Azrul, have already emphasized, that the problem with binge drinking is that it relates to very significant and severe social issues. It leads to drunk driving. It leads to impaired or uninhibited behaviors that could increase the risk of sexual abuse and a lot of other problems. Azrul, do you want to again look at this binge drinking issue and where public health strategies might come in?
Well, Shaoyi, one of the things that you've heard the saying that the first step to addressing a problem is to acknowledge that you have a problem. And I think this is one of the key principles used in dealing with alcoholism. And the good news is that when it comes to data, it does seem that using findings from NHMS 2019, as well as various studies that look at the issue in Malaysia, we do have a picture of what's going on when it comes to this issue. What we may not have enough of are the infrastructure, the structures to address them. In countries like in Japan, in Thailand, and even Indonesia, there are already programs that help provide support. There are addiction programs, there are alcohol support programs, and especially in the UK, where it's actually part of government strategies under public health. But in Malaysia, unfortunately, it still remains something that is parked as being part of private behavior. So even though we have an idea of what the problem is, we don't really have a lot of programs that are being driven to address them. They're really dependent on family, social community settings, and even private sector. So you have a situation where most of it depends on structures like Alcoholics Anonymous Malaysia, for example, where you would be able to go and get support and also be able to talk about these issues and to be able to get help, essentially, from people who are facing the same kind of problems. But the reality here is, despite knowing what we know today, I believe that the problem of alcoholism, and in this case, binge drinking, is still neglected, simply because perhaps officially we're not acknowledging that the problem is something that structurally, from a governance perspective, from a public health perspective, we need to address. Mm. And that goes into things like funding, having programs, supporting NGOs that work on it. So as a result, we still continue to have this problem despite being able to describe And just like addiction issues, whether it's drug-related or tobacco addictions and so forth, it requires a so-called whole-of-society approach. It's not just one pill you can settle the problem, you know.
How much of that do you think stems from a misguided perception that an addiction is character related? It's viewed with a moral lens.
Well, it is. I mean, I think when you look at in things in Malaysia, unfortunately, everything's looked at from a moral lens. I mean, let's face it, right? So, when it comes to issues of personal behavior, which this falls under, honestly, and I have to caution here anybody out there who's trying to impose more strict laws or legislation or increase taxes, is that you can only do so much. And then it goes back to individuals. It goes back to families, communities around that individual. And most importantly, knowledge. We haven't done enough to educate people about alcoholism, certainly not binge drinking. And definitely when it comes down to it, if you're trying to prevent this from happening in the future, it's almost luck, honestly. It depends on the individual, it depends on the level of education, depends on so many factors around that person to prevent that from happening. And we are failing when it comes to this issue, just like in many other addictions. You know, when it comes to this issue, there is so much moral burden that's placed on it that people are discriminated, even ashamed to come out and say that they have a problem with alcohol.
Mm-hmm. So yes, Dr. N.
Right, so I just want to add one. So it's Malaysia is a multi-ethnicity, right? So countries, and then right, so from states to states, right? So the situation's also different. When we want to design a programs or awareness programs, right? So it also had to be culturally sensitive, right? I'm saying that so is because, right? You know, some of the states, right? I mean, like different states, they have different right, societal attitudes right, towards alcohol. Some of the states like Telangana and Kelantan, right, which are Muslims right, predominant. So these states, right, so governments, right, they do not actually have the problem to ban the sales or consumptions of the alcohol because right, so alcohol among that right, so community is described as a devil. Right, so it's very easy, right, to stop the bans and you know, try to ban the sales or right to consumptions of alcohol. However, right, in other states, right, for example, in Borneo, we all know that right, indigenous peoples in Borneo has been traditionally drinking a homemade rice wine.
Yeah. It's called
or the tapais in their communal gatherings and harvest festivals. So for them, alcohol is part of their tradition, cultures, and it's important, right, to even to identify themselves. So right, it's also in their identity. Every household, right, so has its own recipes, right, for the, these rice wines, and they are extremely proud of that. Like, therefore, right, so it's, if we have a program that is like anti-alcohol or banning the alcohol, it will not work well. They will perceive, right, this is a threat to their culture.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, Dr. Anne, because I think banning or some kind of punitive action towards, you know, this problem is not going to solve it. You know, I love tapai, for example. You know, I hate to think that somebody's going to ban tapai, you know. And the thing here is that even though it's sort of culturally sensitive, the fact is that even amongst Malays, even though they're the lowest when it comes to alcohol consumption, there's a bigger problem of binge drinking amongst them. And that's what we need to acknowledge, that even amongst Malays, there is drinking and there is a problem. And this is where we need to look beyond these cultural, religious barriers and look to it as a public health issue.
So what can work then? Banning won't work. You know, making it less accessible, pricing, do things like that work?
Well, the reality here, Xiaoyi, and you placed me in a very interesting spot here, which is the fact is whatever that can be done has already been done by the government. You know, we hear one of the populist positions is always to increase more action, punishment for drunk driving, for example, increase penalties for different behavior as a result of drunk driving or being drunk and so forth. It's populist to say that, but the penalties are already quite heavy in itself, and they're not necessarily preventive because it goes back to personal behavior. Unfortunately, whatever actions that are being put into place can never bring back the loss of a loved one who had died as a result of drunk driving, for example. And that's important to note here. So we need to make sure that we address this problem as an addiction problem, one that requires us providing support for the individual who is suffering from alcoholism and treat it in a way that is able to provide treatment. The problem right now is there is very little of that today. You know, it's almost hoping that somehow this will solve itself through recognition that there is a problem, except that we never recognize that these people are having problems and there are no systems to support that. So right now, if I were to say what needs to be done, limiting times for the sale of alcohol, we've already done that. Heavy penalties for, drunk driving, there's quite a heavy penalty already as it is. Banning alcohol, people will just go and get it from, illicit alcohol. In fact, it would be pretty bad because moonshine, which is illicit production of alcohol, will actually increase and people probably die and lose their lives as a result of unsafe alcohol. So we need to be able to regulate. But I'm going to say the most unpopular thing, shall we, which is that we need to educate people, and I mean everyone, on drinking responsibly, but also moderately. I think it's no point saying to people that they shouldn't drink. People will drink.
And that part about acknowledging that there is a problem in the community, instead of saying, no, we don't have a problem because we are a respectful and whatever kind of culture. Dr. Anne, your thoughts?
Well, right. So on top of it, I think that we have to upskill the campaigns on the harmful use of alcohol during certain festivals to prevent the binge drinking. And it had to be a cultural sensitive as well. Other than that, I think, of course, we should expand and strengthen the current alcohol consumption, screenings of the interventions, so we can actually identify people who have a problem with their alcohol, will get the treatment or interventions much earlier, rather than at their severe state of alcohol use disorder.
Absolutely. We have a caller on the line, Jimmy, that who wants to share his experience. So if we have some time, we'll just very quickly hear from Jimmy. Just wait for the producers to put him on the line. Hi, Jimmy. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Good afternoon. Yes, we have just a little bit of time left, Jimmy, but we'd like to hear what you have to share.
Yeah, so I started drinking when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
When I took it on because of peer pressure.
Right.
And from there, the journey went on, and gradually from beers, it started to increase to hard liquors.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, when I went into went to work, I was not earning much.
Yep.
So I had to find cheap liquors.
Right.
And the journey continues. It just went on where I couldn't stop drinking. Particularly when events like one of my friends passed away, and that really put me into a serious depression, and I couldn't cope myself. So I drinking was one of the ways that I had to forget my things that I've seen with it, you know.
Yeah.
So it went on, and I couldn't stop it until I got married. My wife hates drinking and smoking. So I quit smoking, but I couldn't quit drinking.
Yeah.
I started binge drinking excessively.
Mm-hmm.
Now it led to a lot of problems with me and my wife.
Right.
And she was very strong and helpful. Just 2 years ago, things went out of hand. Alcohol really made me a different person. I would say I really turned into a monster. At the point where I hit my wife and I ran away from my home. 7 days later, I came back crying and I was sent to medical professionals to seek help. And then from there, they helped me, people helped me to come out from this devilish habit. Memang betul, ini adalah kencing syaitan.
Yes.
My friend say, a drop of alcohol, you cannot pray solat for 40 days. I'm not Muslim, but I really took that seriously. With a lot of support and moral support and a good, you know, people around me really helped me a lot. And I went to building myself, exercising, and focused myself on a different way. And I've been disciplined, and it was really hard for me to stop, but I'm here with 2 years without a drop of alcohol.
Well done, Jimmy. Congratulations. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you,
Jimmy. Well, that was Jimmy's experience. And, you know, we have a couple of other messages. I want to just quickly read them out as well. Elin message to say she tells her son, a 20-something-year-old son, that he doesn't need to prove himself when the rest of his friends are drinking. And also she reminds her son to call her when he's too drunk, anytime, anywhere. And I think that's really important. Steve has a message to say, agreeing with what's been discussed today, drinking responsibly and drinking moderately. He's against banning alcohol from coffee shops and medical centers, medical halls. So, you know, I think Jimmy's story is something that I'd like to end on, because it does show, and it's a great demonstration of what Dr. Ann said. It's a long and winding road. But I like how you put it. You're just retraining the brain, aren't you? You're retraining the brain, and you're trying to get yourself out of that habit, that addiction of having to reach for a drink anytime. Maybe just very quickly, a final message from each of you, Dr. Ann.
Well, that's right. So please get help early. Don't wait and think that's right. You can solve the problems, because right. None of us has been trained to actually know how to quit anything.
The brain doesn't work that way.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Our brain just not been trained at all.
Yeah.
So you do need people to guide you and to help you.
Absolutely. Excellent one. Azrul?
You know, Jimmy's story is one that is experienced by so many, not just here in Malaysia, but around the world. And it is a journey, and one that I hope that we can all be able to look at in the way that Elaine has looked at it, from the support that she's giving to her son. And that is without judgment, with dignity and compassion. And I think the only way that we could be able to deal with these sort of issues is by taking the approach that Elaine has taken, and to support people like Jimmy.
Thank you so much. My co-host, Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. And we've had joining us Associate Professor Dr. Ann Yee, Clinical Addiction Psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Centre. This has been Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.